Hey Julia, thanks for doing this interview. You and I go way back. I think it's something like 12 years ago. I met you while we were in Dubai. If you could you give a little bit of a history of, how you got into the arts, maybe where you started, where you went to school? I know a little bit about it, but I'd like to kind of get us on even footing of where you came from.
Yes, sure, absolutely. And it's a pleasure for me also, Ken, to do this interview with you.
Thank you.
We met in Dubai, that's right, but I grew up mostly in Connecticut in a small town called Knowing near Mystic that has a long history of art as well. There were lots of artists there. And two things sort of guided me to the arts. One is my parents love art, collected some art, and always took me to museums. And next door was a terrific artist who gave lessons to children and adults. So I grew up just going to art classes all the time. And there was another art teacher too, quite a good, well-known sculptor. So it was just a part of my life all the time. But when it was time to go to college, somehow I didn't put that together as a career. It just seemed too fanciful that one would be an artist. So I studied art history. It seemed like a compromise, a good compromise. I went to Vassar College in New York State and studied art history. But somewhere in the course of doing that, I realized that what I really like is making art. So
the hands-on kind of feel?
Pardon?
The hands-on part of it, the, kind of actually the creation part of it?
Absolutely. I'm just drawn to making things, that responding to life itself, as opposed to analyzing, other works that have already been made. I like the unknown about creating things. No, nothing wrong with art history. It's very important for an artist to understand art history, and it provides a terrific grounding. But for me, myself, I just feel that making stuff is so much more rewarding or more connects with me more.
That makes sense.
The international part sort of fits into it. The first year I lived abroad, I learned to speak Spanish. I was living in Spain, and that's the country I went back to after college. But living abroad, you're kind of faced with questions you don't normally have in your own country. People are asking you constantly, "What are you doing here?" So it's kind of like holding a mirror up to yourself all the time. What am I doing here? What
exactly.
Do I really do? And that's so in Barcelona is where I had my first solo show in a place called the Harlem Jazz Club. And then it went from there. After that, I really wanted to learn German. So I went to Germany and spent 2 years, terrific creative years in Berlin. I mean, there's no place like Berlin. And then after that, it was time to get back to the U.S. This is the days before internet and so forth. And I went to graduate school at the University of Delaware, which is a small gem of a program. It's just excellent. Anyone looking for a graduate school program, it was super. Great studios, great professors, lots of attention, and lots of freedom to do what you want.
So how long were you out of undergrad before you started grad school? Like a couple of years or?
No, I think it was 5 years.
5 years.
Between grad and graduate school. And I also worked in a museum that time too, which was really a terrific opportunity in Philadelphia, put up a history museum at the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. So I got a little insight into how museums and gallery work, galleries are run.
Did
you
I,
want more of that?
Oh, yeah. I was like, did I lose the connection? Yeah, where were we? Okay, so you were in Berlin, and then you came back and went to grad school. Now, I know, because I've known you for so long, I know that you've traveled all around. You were in Turkey, you were in Dubai. Were there any other places that you spent time, or?
I traveled through Europe a bit, and I was in France, but just for a summer, volunteering with disabled people at a disabled summer camp. But then the rest has been mostly traveling. So it's really four countries that I've really lived in, exhibited, taught, and learned. Usually I learn the language where I live, though Dubai is the only country where I was not able to learn Arabic, just some introductory Arabic.
Yeah, it's really hard there. It's hard to learn the language there.
Yes. You'd have to really make it change your, you know, maybe change your job so you have more time to focus on it.
So. Right. So you were in Turkey for how long? You were teaching in Turkey, right?
Right. I was in Turkey for 6 years, and the first 2 years I was teaching at Koç University, which had recently opened. And then I taught at Istanbul Technical University. And then my last year I was doing illustrating a children's book, and I scaled down my teaching to do work on my art that the last year that I was there.
So were you always an illustrator? Because I've known you, you sketch a lot, you draw a lot, and you illustrate quite a bit. I've seen some of your work, like you went into Arabic patterns and things like that. What would you consider like your favorite, or what do you spend the most time doing?
Ooh, it's so hard to know. You know, I just love all kinds of art. And I guess when I say my favorite, it might be my personal work that is not for a client, which is, it's not telling any specific story. It's my own kind of surreal work that's very, I might describe it as kind of Elizabeth Murray-esque on shaped canvases. But the illustration, you know, I also love the idea. I do enjoy working for a brief. And I got into the illustration quite a few years after graduate school. I mean, where I'm from and from in the time I was studying art, illustration was kind of a bad word. It was not real art compared to studio art. There was a division, a hierarchy.
Well, I think in some situations it's still that way. I think some of the older painters kind of consider kind of selling yourself if you do illustration. At least that's exactly my experience.
And I mean, even in the quote-unquote old days, you could get into an argument. You know, you could say, well, plenty of studio artists have done illustration in their early years or even later years, Edward Hopper being one of them. But I think the whole thing, illustration has really turned a corner in this century. Yeah, I'd probably say in this century. I think with the internet has changed the focus of illustration as well. And the lines are just not as clear. Things sort of blur over. It's very easy to work for clients and do your own work. And illustrators promote themselves. They take their careers into their own hands more than before. And I would say young artists today hardly make a distinction. You know, it's just, it's a creative or a... So that, thankfully, that sort of break isn't there. Though I find when I have to present myself, I do distinguish what is my work and then what is what was done for a client. Though I think when you, my favorite artists, their style, their vision endures whether they're working for a client or their own. I mean, it shouldn't be that much of a break between what you do. There should be something connecting the work, yet some similarities and differences, but there is a connection between them.
Because you spent a majority of your career outside the U.S., do you think that there's a difference between, say, the international community treats your work versus that in the U.S.? Is there a difference or...
Well, I think there's a different attitude to the arts. I remember saying before I had gone back to Spain that time, expressing how I'm an artist and want to pursue my painting. And I just had many people just kind of rolled their eyes, you know, good luck. But in Europe, it just seemed very much like, oh, of course, you know, and she's a teacher and he's a plumber and you're an artist. It's more of the accepted part it's sort of an accepted profession in a different way than I found it to be in this country, at least in the circles where I was spending time.
Did you enjoy being international?
But see, that was your question.
Hello?
Did I enjoy the international scene?
Hold on, I'm getting a poor connection, so we'll kind of wait here for just a second. Are you hearing me okay?
Okay. No, it broke up then too, and I got the same poor connection thing as well. And it's gone now on my end.
Okay, I've still got it, but we'll go with it. What was the question? Question was, did you enjoy being international?
Do you enjoy? Absolutely. I kind of thrive in an international setting. I'm not saying I'm longing for it now, but I think there's something about shifting of and being conscious about your identity in reflection of those around you that really prompts creative activity. I think it's very, in some place more than others. I mean, I find Germany, just when all I have to do is change planes in Germany and my head is full of ideas. Just get my imagination going. So I just think traveling and shifting vision and viewpoints and identities is very, it just inspires creative expression.
How long were you international? How long did you live outside of the U.S.?
The last time was 19 years.
Wow.
Of course, I'm a teacher, so I've been coming in the summer, usually every summer, but not always. And then before that, I guess I was abroad 4 years maybe, not all at once.
Yeah. That's a long time. That's the majority of your adult life, right? After, if you factor out school, then most of it is overseas, right?
Right.
Was it a shock? Coming back to the U.S.?
Well, because I'd been here in the summers, it was not as much of a shock as it could have been. And because of the internet, it's less of a shock. I mean, the first time I came back after 3 years and went to graduate school, I did feel like kind of a fish out of water. But now with the internet, I think there's a connectivity across around the globe, which makes the international experience not quite what it used to be. But for at present, I've been here now since the end of 2016, so over 2.5 years now. I think I'm getting poor connection, but I think there is an attitude to work here. I think this country is a tough place to live.
The U.S.?
I think there's I'm not sure. I think there's a sort of a natural workaholic attitude here because you have to get your health insurance and everything to survive here, and I think it sometimes depends where you are, but I think it sort of takes, I think people sort of enjoy life a little bit more in some other places that I've lived in. They take it a little slower.
That makes sense. Even in Dubai, which is considered to be a very kind of modern, kind of cosmopolitan city, I've always felt that it was kind of laid back in a lot of different ways.
Right. You have to remember, most expats, which is the majority of people in Dubai, they went there really for one reason, which was to earn money. I mean, it's a great place to work. Not everybody. Some people were there for the culture.
The culture?
The culture and the middle, just to be in the Middle East. Absolutely. I mean, I would say I was there for both reasons. But at the same, despite that, there's definitely a cafe culture there. There's a relaxed. There people definitely were in the pursuit of how to enjoy themselves when they were not working.
Yeah, I definitely saw that. There was this kind of relaxed kind of feeling of just, we'll take the day as it comes. When we go to work, maybe we'll push a little bit harder, but at night we're going to relax, go have dinner, and just chill.
I think it was more so before we got there. I think it was definitely more Middle Eastern in the 80s and so forth.
Yeah.
But
Besides working as an illustrator or being a working artist, I'm not sure I got the answer. Do you consider yourself an illustrator, or do you not like that title that you're like a painter or just an artist in general?
I'm a painter, but I do make sculptures from time to time, painted sculptures and installations. So I guess I refer to myself more as an artist. Okay. Depends on the context. And I say artist slash painter slash illustrator or just artist. Maybe I do it in that way. Sculpture and installation is definitely not my focus.
Right. I understand.
It's more of a side, expression of what I do. And then the work I learned, the sort of pattern design, that came out of an incredible opportunity I had in Istanbul. The government gives courses in traditional Ottoman design, which is what's used in the illustration of the Qurans. It's also used in illustration on the handmade tiles that you see in all of the architecture, traditional architecture around the country. And it's also used on furniture, carvings, objects, door frames. But I learned it with the paintbrush and the pencil drawing, and we were reproducing it on paper. So that was just a tremendous experience and taught me how to make patterns, so I've applied those skills to other sort of imagery and so forth. It gave me a whole different view.
Are you still doing that now, or have you moved on?
I think sometimes. It's not a focus of my practice, but I do it from time to time. And I'm still there's a traveling show that has some of my work. It's called Geometric Alchemia, which is organized by the amazing Rennie Gower, who's a professor from VCU, and Jorge, who organized it with her. So it was two curators. And I did some designs there in a different way on cutout paper that are mounted directly onto the wall. And that show, which is a group of artists from the Middle East as well as Afghanistan, it's moved around different places in this country. It also went to Australia, to Melbourne. And it is opening for, I think, the fifth time maybe in North Virginia on the campus of Old Dominion University in the Gordon Galleries at the end of next month.
Oh, that's
so
really neat.
My work is still out there. Yeah.
Are you going to go to the opening?
You bet I am. And I've got a wall drawing in there, a design which is partially on the wall, partially with paper mounted floating in front of the wall so it casts shadows in front of it. And then I have a 4-foot long paper cut with designs in there, and it's painted yellow on the back so that in the shadow has a sort of a glow of yellow on the wall.
That sounds really great. Besides being a working artist, I know that you have that you're running a gallery called the Peanut Factory, right? Can you give me a little bit of information about that?
The Peanut Factory. Sure. So the Peanut Factory is located in 1932 Peanut Processing Building. My husband and I got in 2012 from Preservation, North Carolina. And it is almost, I think it was originally 2,000 square feet with two tall towers, that like five-story office, and a fantastic big wooden beam structure called the Big Bay.
Julia.
And we have been...
You're breaking up. We're going to start this one over again, okay?
Okay.
Because this is really good stuff. Go ahead and start with, like I asked the question. Besides working artists, I know that you run a gallery called the Peanut Factory. Can you give us a little bit of information about that? Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. It's called the Peanut Factory. And we do exhibit some art here. It's not really up to contemporary standards for a gallery yet. But the space that we've had some displays is called the Big Bay. And it's part of this complex. It's a 1932 peanut processing mill that my husband and I got from Preservation, North Carolina. And we are slowly converting it into an artist retreat and residency program with a strong interest in community art activities. So we usually have it every year at least one artist going back to 2013. And we'll have two more artists coming later in August. We've already had two this summer. One of them's coming back and another one's coming. I can tell you more about them. And we eventually will have artists staying here. One of the towers, we've done some rehabilitation there that's not quite ready yet, but we will eventually have artists. We'll probably have up to 20 artists here staying at a time. And then we've got workspace with equipment, some welding, woodworking materials, and then lots of space for photography or painting, drawing. And yeah, it's been very exciting. We are just in the middle of getting recognized as a nonprofit. We're waiting for feedback on our application. And it's going to have gallery space, workshop space, and eventually restaurant, you know, eating areas and so forth, right here in this little town called Edenton in eastern North Carolina.
Wow. I mean, honestly, I thought it was just a gallery. I didn't realize that you were doing all that. That sounds like really impressive. I know through emails you've said you had visiting artists and stuff, but I just thought that they were working in the back somewhere. I didn't realize you had workshops and wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little tricky because there's still lots more rehab to do. I mean, part of it is fixed up. That's the section that we're living in. But we have the tower still needs much more work. Part of the structure just was not salvageable. So we had to demo some areas, which took little bit every year. We still have a little bit more to demo in the back. But right now we've got a huge sculpture hanging in the Big Bay made by Jeff Schofield. Did you ever know him in Dubai?
I don't think so. The name doesn't sound familiar. I may have met him and I just don't remember his name.
He trained as an architect, and that's what brought him to Dubai. And then he decided what he really wanted to do was art. He was a student of mine at Dubai International Art Center. And then he's just finished his MFA at Cranbrook. So we've had quite a few artists, several artists, come from Cranbrook to do residencies with us. And he's one of them. So he was here earlier this summer and created, it's about environmental awareness. It's a big collection of plastic that he has hanging, suspended in a net with even plastic buoys holding it up. It's very colorful. And it's kind of like, the big gyres of plastic in the middle of the oceans. It's kind of an expression of that. And he does performance with it. So he did a performance piece out in front of the peanut factory this earlier this summer with Jeshri Bhadia, who's a student of ours from American University in Dubai, where you and I both taught, and she also is a Cranbrook graduate, and they both did a performance about, it was called Balance, and I'm going to have to send you links to videos on that one later. It's hard to describe that one. And he is coming back with an artist also from Cranbrook who just graduated. Her name is Ashley Beatty, and she photographs nature and trees, and we've got a connection with a developing land conservation project at called the Sproul Farm, right on the Albemarle Sound, where we're located on the other side of the Sound. So she's going to be here taking photographs from August 8th to 18th, and Jeff Schofield's going to be back making some more sculptures about environmental awareness, and probably the two of them are going to do a performance. And we're working on a location for that. Don't know if it will be here at the Peanut Factory or we'll find another place in the area.
You know, of all the people I know, you are probably the most dedicated artist. And it seems like you're always doing something. You're always moving into some other area or just listening to you. Because I didn't know this about the Peanut Factory. I mean, serious. It sounds like it's almost like taking up more of your time than the art. Do you
It is quite an endeavor, and we have been called a little crazy sometimes when people come to visit us. But North Carolina's got a long history of artist retreats, residency programs. We feel like it's kind of a tradition here. Many of them are out west, up in the mountains. It may take, I tell people, it may take till all of my hair has turned gray, but we'll make this place happen. So I love it because the way I see it is I'm not really international anymore, or not in this phase of my life, but I'm bringing the international artists here. The other two artists we had here were Toma Gabor and his wife Anna from Romania, and they did. Toma made a welded sculpture piece. It's nearly finished. And Anna did some of her amazing, intricate, sort of Bauhaus-style paper cuts. So I love having the artists come to me, bringing international flavor to my little world here.
Yeah, kind of keep it in the family where you're showing what it's like. You're kind of sharing what you experienced with the area around you.
Exactly. And ultimately, I would love to teach here as well. I love the idea of teaching with no grades and having people come in and do like a 1 month immersion in their work and really guide them, modeling it after a fantastic course I did at RISD one summer years ago, where you just really 1 month and you really change your direction and focus and find out what your work is about.
So what keeps you going? I mean, at some point, don't you, like, I'm taking myself as an example. There's the time where it's like, I just want to unplug. I just want to stop and maybe just go coast for a couple of weeks. Do you ever do that? Do you ever just kind of like unplug and take it easy?
Well, I guess, like everyone, you have the time. Usually I do something like go paddling on the great waterways we have here, cycling in the countryside. But as an artist, there is a moment, unless someone is commissioning you and you're having big museum gallery sellouts, there's going to be a moment when you're going to ask yourself, is this worth it? Should right. I still be doing this? Right. I mean, everyone comes to that. And maybe even if you are having big gallery shows and you know that people question themselves. But I'd say what drives me and others who I've read about is it's kind of jealousy. You know, at an early point in your life, you saw work, whatever it be, a great film, a great poem, a great novel. For me, great paintings. And I just said, I wish I had made that.
Right.
And that drives you forward. Just you're so focused on that will give meaning to what I do. And you can't get it out of your head. And right. You want to be so-and-so. Or, you know, and I think about someone I saw when I was a teenager, a terrific Fairfield Porter painting show in Boston. And that I remember just thinking, I want to make great paintings. I mean, there are many other artists I admire as well, but Fairfield Porter is still one of my heroes. I love the way he works with colors, the flatness of space, and so forth. So it's a kind of jealousy.
Okay.
Yes, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. We're getting some spotty audio, but I think I'm going to be able to edit. So I wasn't sure if it actually disconnected on us or not. So, okay. Well, is there anything that you'd like to say to people who see your work? What would you like them to think of? Is there a message in your work, or are you just creating for yourself?
Well, it depends. If I'm doing something for a client or an illustration project, there's usually some kind of message in there, often educational related. Say my children's book about Istanbul had sort of an underlying message. I was trying to communicate history of Istanbul. And a project I'm working on now that I can't say very much about is about environment. It sort of teaches you about a beautiful part of the world, national park, and appreciation for animals because it has another animal as a character, and self-acceptance. So it has sort of an emotional message there.
Is this a book or?
Yeah, that's a children's book. Oh, okay. And in this children's book, I did not write it. It was just a great story that I had an opportunity to illustrate, and I couldn't refuse it. I thought it was a terrific one. But I better wait till that moves along a little bit more in its publishing schedule there before I say anything else
about
it. But that definitely has a message. In my own work, I think, I guess I kind of like ambiguity. I don't like very clear, hit you over the head sort of messages in my own work. There's often an aspect of surrealism, of I try to show a kind of mystery, but also humor. You know, I like a light touch in what I create. I like my work to appeal to all ages. I like little kids to be attracted and adults. And I like the kind of work that you look at, it has an appeal, and then you need to step up closer and you find something else in it. I like a layer of details. So you can keep looking and looking and kind of see different things each time you look at it. And I guess maybe celebration. I mean, I don't want to say I always make happy paintings. Some of my work is sometimes is kind of disturbing. But it's about sort of dealing with the unconscious and it's a way of interpreting visual thinking. I sort of connect with trends in drawing as thinking. So it's shapes as metaphors for ideas and how sort of visually showing how the brain thinks and formulates ideas. I connect a lot with poets, contemporary poets, as well as poets from the beginning of the modernist period when they are breaking language down to its very basic forms and looking at the relationship of words to each other. I feel that way about shapes. I've got a Miro postcard on the wall in front of me where he's got these surreal shapes connected by thin lines. So, and they're sort of suspended or floating, all kind of metaphors for maybe human experience and finding your place in the world and environment. I mean, sometimes it'll be kind of just funny. I'll have a title that just the title itself will include the image. I mean, one of my paintings is called At the End, Tired Phrase, At the End of the Day, because that was a phrase I heard seemingly every day for a while. Everybody would say at the end of the day, at the end of the day. And I just thought it was overused. So I made a picture about at the end of the day. So I'll respond to very specific things, and then sometimes it's just very general. A theme I've been working with is a word I invented called brain swarming, which should remind you of brainstorming, right. But I call it brain swarming. So it's the brain's activity of making connections. And I did it first in a drawing series, and then I've been bringing it into my painting. And then here in North Carolina, cliche as it may be, I've just fallen for the landscape. I just love looking at landscapes. And this may go back to my Connecticut upbringing where I was surrounded by a 150-year tradition of landscape painting. There were just lots of people in that area, always have been. So I'm bringing my brain swarming into the landscape now. So I have landscapes and surreal shapes above it. And the surreal shapes are sort of inspired by the Tezip designs that I studied in Istanbul, the interweaving, it's called interlace. But it's not like the Islamic pattern. It's not perfect. It's not symmetrical, but it's sort of that idea, the interlace idea.
Well,
sort of bring those two together.
Is there any place people could see some of your work or even contact you maybe?
Right. Well, the show of the pattern work is up at the Gordon Galleries in Old Dominion University, August through September. And then I have some work right here in Edenton at the Chowan Arts Council. It's a gallery we have right in this town. So I usually have something on display there. And I'm working on some other proposals right now. I may have some other shows in 2020 in the area, probably North Carolina or Virginia, but don't have any specific dates for those right now. And then online, of course. Quite a bit of my work is online. Older work is at juliatownsend.com.
That's the one I always go to. I always go to juliatownsend.com if I want to see what you're doing. And it's like nothing has changed. It's still the same.
It's the old work. I need to, I'll eventually fuse that into. But newer work is at juliatownsendartist.blogspot.com.
Okay.
So it's a blog spot, but I've adapted it to be more of a web page, and I've got sculptures there, mostly paintings, drawings, a link to my drawing blog.
Well, I'll add the links on the article I write about this. And if it's okay with you, I'll put a gallery in of maybe 10 to 12 pieces, and then with links to see more, then visit your website.
Great.
If that's okay. Okay. Do you have any advice for someone coming up or that are listening to this? Maybe somebody that's starting out, or maybe they're faltering a little bit. I don't consider myself a fine artist, and I like illustration, but I'm always fascinated to hear somebody talk about what it was like for them coming up. Maybe the obstacles that they ran into. Maybe being treated like not a true artist because you're doing illustration. And, you know, it's your style, so you keep plugging away, and eventually it kind of works out, right? But you have transformed into all sorts of different areas. How does that come about? And do you have advice for somebody doing that?
Well, the advice people told me is don't go into different areas.
Basically the opposite of what you're doing, right?
Right. In order to market yourself, you are much wiser to focus narrow so that people can understand your work at a glance, or not at a glance, but they can understand your work. It is not generally advisable to branch out into other things. I find, however, that, the world is a big and expansive place. And if I'm only going to respond to it in one way, it's almost stifling for me. I need to do lots of different things. And I think you need to figure out, any artist needs to listen to their own voice in that way. They may be able to do one style, or they may not. And you have to come to terms with that. And so that's one bit of advice. The other advice, when you're just starting out, there is, and I can't remember the woman's name. I was just looking for it now. There is, I think she was American or British. It's one of the first sort of advice to creative people, writers or what have you. And she said something that I think is so important. What everybody needs when they're starting out is you need somebody who is interested in your work. I'm not talking about a gallery manager. I'm just talking about a mentor, a friend, another artist. Maybe it is a gallery director, but you need someone who is very interested in your work, who wants to ask you questions about it, who wants to check in with you regularly. Maybe it's your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You need someone who is constantly right on your tails, eager to hear how it's going. And if you don't have someone like that, you create one. And that is your diary, your recordings, or whatever it is. Sometimes you may have someone, maybe they move away and you don't. But you need that. You need an outer voice hanging on breathlessly to your next creation so that you feel that it is so important that you get the next work done.
Right.
So you create it. If you don't have it, you create it. I was always blessed at moving around. You're not always creating wonderful artistic environments, especially before the age of the internet. I was always blessed with remarkable roommates from different countries who would come in at the end of every day, come in my room and say, "Wow, what's that? Why did you do that?" They weren't always artists themselves, but they would come in and ask me about stuff. And it is wonderful. I advise that for everybody.
Right.
So that's one of my biggest messages I always pass on to students.
It sounds like you just need, you need to be somebody's hero when it comes to art. Honestly, that's hard to find if you're not very good at art. Because like me growing up, I remember sitting trying to illustrate things and trying to put things together. And everybody would look at it and kind of nod and go, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. So if you don't have that, you got to kind of make one up for yourself. So
exactly. Yeah. Otherwise it just washes off and it's just, you know, something else you cooked in the kitchen and it's gone the next morning. So
yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end. It looks like I think I told you roughly an hour, and it's pushing that hour right now. I was going to ask a question, and I don't know, I kind of like the idea of asking different artists this question, just to kind of like tie the different interviews that I do together. It's kind of a tough question, and it's kind of a ridiculous question in a lot of different ways, but I thought I would ask you, what do you consider the value of art? Or maybe the better way to put it is, how do you put value on art? Do you judge it based on how much somebody will pay for it, or is some other method? I know a lot of people have different versions of this. I think the last interview I did, I gave the example of if somebody pays $12 million for a Picasso, is that Picasso more valuable than, say, a work that your daughter does or your friend does? And if it is more valuable, then does that translate to a meaning of the art community? Meaning that maybe the art community is a little bit preoccupied with selling. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and much has been written about this lately in the last decade or so, about so much of the monetary value of art. First of all, so I like the idea of a unifying question. I think that's very good. Okay. And I like your question. And I believe art is the only commodity that can be priced with whatever you can get away with. Any other commodity has regulations. There's regulations for car production, for harvests. Everything else has some sort of governmental control. But there is no blue book, really, for art. I mean, you can sort of, once someone's work gets into what's it called, art sales, or, I mean, yeah, there is an aftermarket and so forth for very successful artists. And when they die, the value of their work changes as well. But art can be for whatever you can get for it. So it is kind of a wild, wild west. But I mean, this is as an artist speaking. Of course, when someone's daughter makes a picture, it will have more importance. I mean, it's in the eye of the beholder in some ways.
But, I mean, that was kind of a loaded question because, of course, yeah, somebody's daughter, even if it's your niece or, you know, somebody that you know, it's going to be more valuable, even if nobody's willing to buy it. So I guess that probably wasn't the best example. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what you feel the value of art is. Do you think the value is about the amount somebody will pay? Or is it what the work represents? Because we hear all the time, well, growing up, I used to hear this all the time. It was kind of like this saying that just rattled around for a bit. After the artist dies, his work becomes valuable. And it's kind of like, well, what happened? It's the same work while he was alive. Nobody wanted to buy it when he was alive. Now, because he's dead, it's valuable. Do you know what I mean? So how do you put that value on a piece of art? If you're walking, is it about investing? I mean, some people will, you know, they pick art based on their judgment of what the art's going to be worth in 10, 15 years. But what's your view of that? I mean, how do you view the value of art?
Well, I think art, and I'm using the word in the broadest sense, is kind of what makes life, it balances survival. It adds meaning. It adds meaning and levels of significance to the routine, the quotidian experience. But
it makes life worth living, in other words. It's the TV, whether that's art or a movie, that's art. Whether you're looking at whatever, if it's art, it kind of reflects our own values, or I don't know.
Yes, but I think the fact that values rise after someone dies, I mean, it shows how art is a function of time. it's not only what you do, it's when you make something. You know, I could make a cubist image now, but the cubist images made in the 1911 have a much different meaning than the ones that are made now. It's just like 3D experience. It's place, height, width, depth, and the fourth dimension of time. That place, that's as important as the actual object itself.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, well, we're kind of out of time right now. I want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're very busy. I mean, just through the interview, it's obvious you're busy with the Peanut Factory and just staying current. Is there anything that you would like to say about art in general, about the Peanut Factory? Maybe you can plug something. Basically, I'll give you like the final word.
I guess what I didn't really think so much in my early years as an artist, what I think a lot more about now is how art can function in society as a community practice. And I've had some projects done here, the big one with the architect Katya de Haas, where we got the whole community making something for, it's called the Giant Doll's House Project. And I'm very open to those sorts of activities or group mural design and so forth. But I think there's a whole world of art. I mean, for many painters, art is a solitary practice you do at home. For printmakers, less so, and ceramicists, they have sort of a community. But I love the idea of art in society and community projects and as a way that brings people together. So that's sort of one of the big messages about art at the Peanut Factory.
Well, if you don't have anything else, I guess I'll say thank you very much for taking the time to talking to me.
Well, thank you, Ken. I think your whole project here is very exciting, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. We'll be in touch. Bye.
Okay. Bye.